We're really happy to have our next guest coming on tonight, and her name is Rebecca Masterman. It's Dr. Masterman. She's an entomologist, and the U of M breaks ground Monday on the new Bee and Pollinator Research Lab, which is a 10,500-square-foot facility which will house bee research led by world-renowned bee expert Marla Spivak. Joining us now to explain why it's so important to study pollinators is Dr. Masterman, Associate Program Director at the U of M Bee Squad. And Rebecca, I want to welcome you to the Roadhouse.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
You know, it must be exciting to break ground on that new lab, especially with everything that's going on in the bee world. Can you tell us a little bit about that facility?
Sure. In order to tell you about the new facility, I have to tell you a little bit about our old facility.
Good.
The Bee Lab has been part of the University of Minnesota for a very long time. We date back to the early 1900s, but for a long time now, we've been operating the practical lab out of what some have described not as nice as my garage, and the technical lab is a part of our Department of Entomology. So it's exciting for me because I was Dr. Spivak's first graduate student when she came to the U of M in 1992. And when it was Dr. Spivak and Gary Reuter and me in the lab, there was plenty of room. We had enough space. Our facilities definitely were adequate. But when Marla hired me back a few years ago to run the Bee Squad, I walked into a situation where it was very different from when I was in graduate school in the 90s. Instead, there were 7 graduate students, 6 of them PhD students, and then the Bee Squad was starting to grow rapidly. And so the space that was adequate a long time ago was no longer adequate. We have no room for our equipment. We're actually using several different buildings across the university. So we're not like honeybees. We're not very efficient. Instead, we're a little bit inefficient, and so we're really, really excited to get this new space, which is just going to bring everything together. We're going to be able to extract honey at the University of Minnesota once again. We have a lot of surplus honey that we can't extract on site. It's going to bring together not just Dr. Spivak's program, but also a new university professor being hired. So it's really going to be quite amazing to our programs and for the bees.
Now, will that facility have both an indoor and an outdoor aspect to it?
Yes. So the facility is going to actually have 2 practical labs, that one for each professor, Dr. Spivak, and our new hire, Dr. Dan Caraval, who is going to be focusing on native bees. And then there will be a technical lab that will be shared. It's quite efficient. But then outside, we're going to have both 2 apiaries, and then pollinator gardens, so that people who are on campus, they're going to be able to come and take a look at how they can best plant for the bees out there and other pollinators.
Can you explain to the folks what an apiary is and give us a definition, please?
Sure. I'm standing in the middle of one right now, so
okay.
It was really clear to me. But an apiary is what we call a place where we keep honeybee colonies. So it stems from the word apis, which is the Latin genus name for honeybee. And so apiary is really just a bunch of honeybee colonies. And we do an awful lot of both research campus, and then the Bee Squad does a lot of training for beekeepers on our campus. So it's going to give us adequate space and good proximity to the building in order to be able to get that done.
So are you crawling with bees right now?
Well, there are lots of them flying around. So yes, there are lots of bees. But when you open a honeybee colony, unlike what you would expect, most of them just stay on the frames that have the wax comb. They don't all fly out at you and sting you. Instead, they really just kind of keep doing what they're doing.
Well, I haven't had that experience, and I don't think all that many people out in the listening audience have. When you first got involved with bees, was that a little spooky?
No. I think what they say is that people's first experience with a honeybee colony, either they take a step back or they lean in. And if they lean in, we know we've got them hooked for life.
Okay.
It's quite amazing. And that's what most people who actually get to see a colony, that is opened up, that they really do take away quite a level of respect for the honeybee.
Can you tell us why bees are so important to us?
Sure. So when I talk about bees, we also, it's good to note that we have the European honeybee that we manage for agriculture, and then in Minnesota we actually have about 400 different species of native bees that call Minnesota home. But bees are important because one out of every three bites of food we eat is really benefited by bee pollination. And so a lot of the crops, not a lot in Minnesota, but a lot of the crops that we really depend upon for nutrition, like almonds and various fruits and vegetables, they need honeybees in order to help pollinate. And a lot of other things, like the alfalfa that our cows eat, they need honeybees to pollinate in order to have the seeds set. So there are a lot of different aspects where those bees come into play, where we really do depend upon them for our agricultural needs.
Now, you mentioned there's like 400 approximately species of bees in Minnesota, and what we normally think about is honeybees. What are some of the other native bees that are really important also, and how big of the population are they?
So some of the other bees that you might recognize are, we have about 19 different species of bumblebees. Those are the kind of robust black and yellow, sometimes orange, furry bees. And we also have some really pretty, they're called sweat bees. They're Helictidae. And those are often, you'll find them in your garden. They're very common. And so the honeybees that we have are really important in Minnesota because they're really helping our nation's pollination by getting healthy in Minnesota and then going out to other places. But they're also letting us know that if they're not healthy, we might need to worry about those other bees that we can't see, because most of the other bees that we have in Minnesota are nesting in stems or in tunnels. And so we might see them on our flowers, and we actually have to look pretty carefully because I think a lot of people don't notice them. But we have a lot of them out there that really do kind of need our help, and our honeybees are speaking for them.
Now, we think of a lot of the other native bees as being wild bees, and I guess they are, but how about honeybees? Can they be wild bees as well?
So in 1987, we had a very serious mite pest that was introduced in the United States, and over the years, it's almost wiped out our feral colonies of honeybees, and they do exist here and there, and we hear about them, but it's really hard for bees in our area, in Minnesota, to live in the wild.
Honeybees are, and they're called honeybees, because they make honey, and I think, aren't they the only bees that really make honey?
Yes, we have various species of honeybees across the world, but the closest we have to making honey is bumblebees will actually collect nectar and store them in nectar pots, or I'm sorry, wax pots. But our honeybees are unique. We also have a stingless bee that's in South America, and they do make honey, but they make very, very small amounts of it. Our honeybees actually make a lot more honey than they need in order to winter in our climate. They're very unique because they don't have a shut-off switch. They'll just keep collecting honey or nectar and making, turning it into honey. And so that's why we really associate them with the honey we eat, because that is pretty much where it comes from.
Now, the bees get pollen, and they also get nectar as they pollinate plants. What do they do? What do they actually use those things for? Can you explain how that works with the bees?
Sure, sure. So you might be familiar with wasps. This time of year, they're starting to bother people. Wasps will actually feed on other insects, but bees are unique because they are feeding on just pollen and nectar. So they're the cousins of wasps. They have really evolved to use pollen for their protein and nectar for their carbohydrate source.
We've been hearing a lot about bees over the last few years and the problems that bees are incurring. How serious a problem is this? And what kind of problems, the more basic problems, what are some of the basic causes?
So the problem is actually pretty serious. I've had the perspective of being a graduate student and studying these bees in the 90s and then coming back to them a few years ago. And I tell people that I'm seeing diseases that I had only read about in textbooks that have now come back and become a lot more, they occur a lot more regularly in the colonies because the bees are really challenged. They're challenged for a few different reasons. Specifically, honeybees are challenged by this mite pest that I talked about earlier. But the big things that are really impacting all of our bees, we have a lack of forage for them. So our colonies might have produced about 70 pounds of honey each surplus a year, and now that number is down to 30 pounds, which is a pretty dramatic difference. And the other issue that's pretty scary is that the bees, when they go foraging, honeybees might visit 50 flowers on a single flight. And on those flights, they're collecting pesticides. So not just insecticides, but they're collecting herbicides, insecticides, fungicides, different chemicals. And they may be bringing just a little bit of it back to their nest, but the average is about 7 different chemicals per pollen load when the studies are done. And it's not agricultural, all agricultural chemicals. It could be what people are using in their home and gardens. And so it's really kind of a warning to us that we have to give these bees more food, and then we have to keep it clean, and we have to do our best to keep the chemicals off of the flowers, because we certainly don't want to eat that, and I'm pretty sure the bees don't want to either.
We've been hearing a lot the last couple of years at least, and before that as well, about neonicotinoids. Can you tell us a little bit about how serious a problem you feel at the lab that might be, and exactly what are they?
Sure. So the neonicotinoids are, they were actually a really good idea in theory, and it was an effort to create a pesticide that was systemic. So you didn't have to spray crops, but instead you could apply it on the seed, and then it would be taken up into plants, and insects feeding on the plants would then die. And then they really thought they were going to protect our bees by not having the drift of applying chemicals. But the problem is, one, that it's become widespread standard operating procedure in a lot of different locations and industries to use these neonicotinoids, so that often you'll have bee-friendly flowers that have been treated with them, and unfortunately, they're long-lasting. So the pollen and the nectar in these bee-friendly flowers are actually contaminated with the pesticide, and what we've unfortunately learned is that low doses do have an impact. So even if it doesn't kill the insect outright, it can certainly eventually kill a honeybee colony if they're exposed to it enough. And so, but our my concern is that I just don't want to focus on one class of pesticides, but just kind of make it an issue that we have to be careful where we're applying all pesticides. And it's really an issue, not in an agricultural sense. That's not where I'm concerned as much as I am concerned about pesticides maybe being used for cosmetic reasons. So I'd rather have a hole in a rose bush than a bee bringing back some pollen that's been treated with something.
We're speaking with Dr. Becky Masterman. She's Associate Program Director down at the U of M Bee Squad, and we're talking about, obviously, bees. When you talk about a lack of forage, is that due to a kind of our agriculture monocultures that have come about, or is it more complex than that?
I think it's complex. I don't think we can blame kind of one specific land use for the downfall of our bee forage. But we've changed the way we've done things. Since the 1940s, we've really reduced the amount of cover crops that we use. And those cover crops, like clover, were great for the soil and really, really good for bees. Bees love clover. And but when you look at kind of all landscaping, we put a lot of pavement down, we put a lot of just turf down that's not feeding our bees or giving them habitat. So we honestly have a lot of opportunity. We have a lot of opportunity to make changes and the neat thing about my job with the Bee Squad is that one of the things we are supposed to do is to help people help bees. And boy, people want to help, and they have a lot of opportunities to make a few changes, maybe at their place of business, maybe in their own yard, even just putting some flower seeds in a pot and putting them on your deck. That can feed a bee. So it's really not one sector. It's all of us that have made all these changes, and now if we just change a little bit, all of us, it can make a big difference to the bees.
Are native plants a good idea as far as the bees are concerned then?
So native plants are very important. They play a really important role. A lot of insects, a lot of pollinators, have their life cycle that's dependent upon a single type of a plant. So the best example I have for you that everybody's familiar with are monarch butterflies. They need milkweed, which is actually good for bees too. They need milkweed in order to reproduce. And so there are those examples throughout our animal systems. And so planting native flowers is really important. But at the same time, our honeybees are not native. And in order to keep them healthy, it's really great to plant some large areas where of food that they really like clover and other things that really make a big difference to the colonies.
I know there's our president has proposed a very large project to plant, I think it's milkweed, to help mm-hmm. the monarch butterfly. Is that going to be also very helpful to the bee population?
It actually is. It's helpful in a couple of different ways. It's helpful because it's putting food out there, and it's also helpful just because of the recognition it's bringing. We're trying to, in many ways, partner with actually people who are supporting monarchs and people who are supporting bees, because if you're planting for one, you really are planting for the others, and we're really excited about this program because it's going to do a lot of good, definitely.
Now, I know that your website for the new lab and for the Bee Squad is very interactive with folks out there who are looking to learn not only more about bees, but also looking for help in establishing colonies or even supporting colonies. Where can they look to get that information?
So our website is beelab.umn.edu. And like you said, there are classes offered. The main beekeeping class is offered in November and I believe February this year or of next year. And so if you are interested in taking up beekeeping, it's probably worth the trip to come and visit us. We do get people not just from the entire state of Minnesota, but also from other states, because the method that is being taught as far as keeping bees, that's actually been taught prior to Dr. Spivak's arrival, and it's a really well-respected method. And then for other information, you don't have to come and see us. You can just go to the website. But there's a lot of information about those wild bees out there and some information about wild bee nest habitats and what you could do to support those other bees out there.
And I believe you mentioned that there is a list of plants that are most valuable to bees.
I think I might have neglected that.
Okay.
But we do have plants for Minnesota bees, and that gives you a start. There's a lot of work that we need to do as far as figuring out what those bees like. Some of the ways you can find out is even just going to your garden, and if you see bees on something, then just plant more of it. Ask your friends, ask your neighbors what they see in their yard, and that helps give you really good regional information, because if it's successful, then it's probably meant to be planted there. And you don't have to put a lot of input into the colony, into the plant in order to keep it healthy.
One more question for you. I noticed when I went to the website that there actually were two facilities mentioned that are proposed. Of course, the one that your lab that's going to be groundbreaking on Monday, but another demonstration lab located elsewhere. Is that still in the works?
It absolutely is. It's the Arboretum, and we're really excited because on the St. Paul campus, our lab is really meant for research and for some teaching through the Bee Squad and other Bee Lab programs. But At the Arboretum, it is a facility that is meant to just educate the public and give public more information about bees and pollinators. And that, last I heard, they were breaking ground in August also. So we should hear more about that soon. And that's just going to be a beautiful, beautiful building. And the neat thing is that Dr. Civic has been involved in planning both buildings. And so there's going to be some coordination between the two buildings where we will be referring people back and forth, and they will share some of the information that we're doing about research, and then we'll have our pollinator gardens, but they're going to be nothing compared to what the Arboretum is going to do at their place.
A lot of excitement happening down there in the world of bees at U of M. We've been speaking with Dr. Becky Masterman, and she is the Associate Program Director at the U of M at the B Squad. And Becky, is there any hope you could move up to the A Squad?
Okay, that's not the first time I've heard
that. I bet it isn't.
But the t-shirts wouldn't look as good, right?
I guess not. Hey, I want to thank you so much for your time, and what an exciting time for you, and good luck with everything that happens down there at your research lab.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. This is Minnesota's Bee Lab, so we're really excited that you are interested in hearing more about it.
Thank you very much.